Enzo's death was the one death, probably of the whole series, where I think we all wondered if we went too far. We knew we needed Stefan to do something absolutely unforgivably horrible, you know, because that was that journey.
Stefan, listen to me.
Let me guess. You're gonna appeal to my humanity and my brotherly bond. Think about Elena, blah, blah, blah.
You don't have to think about anything.
Just turn around. I'll meet you wherever you want.
Yeah? And then what?
Then,
whatever anger you're working through, man, you can just take it out on me.
I am
taking it out on you. I'm on my way to murder Elena.
Stefan.
In fact, Waze says I'll be there in 5 minutes.
You don't have to do this for Cade.
I'm not doing this for Cade.
I'm doing this for me.
What?
When Cade first suggested this idea, I was like, God, why didn't I think of that? Oh, I know why, because I've been too busy taking care of my brother.
You don't have to take care of me, ever again.
I got this, I'm good. I'll take care of both of us, Stefan.
No, you won't, Damon, you're not capable of it.
But you'll keep trying to interfere with everything as long as we're connected through her.
That is why I want Elena gone.
I swear to God, Stefan, if you hurt her, you were dead to me.
That's exactly my point. I want to cause her death so you can blame me for it.
Because then, you will finally stop trying to save me.
And I will be free of you. Forever.
This is not the answer, man. Leave Elena out of this. I am begging you, Stefan.
Welcome back to Entertainment Weekly's Binge of the Vampire Diaries. I'm your host, Sam Heifel, and I'm joined by executive producer Julie Pleck, writer Brett Matthews, and star Michael Mullarkey to talk all about season 8. As we say with every episode, there's a series-wide spoiler alert on this. I mean, we're quite literally spoiling the end at this point. But if we decide to go back and talk about earlier seasons, we can do that too, which I actually am going to do. I start every episode by acting like I'm surprised that I'm going to do this, but I do this every episode. I want to start because we have Michael, and obviously season 8 is not your first season of the show. I want to start with your introduction to the series and kind of, were you aware of Vampire Diaries before you joined it?
Marginally. I was living in England at the time, in London. So I was mainly focusing all of my brain power on theater stuff. I was mostly working in the theater, doing stuff at the National and the West End. But I'd heard of the show and I'd, you know, it was being played on a network over there. And I remember randomly catching it one night. But that's literally all I knew before I got the job. Yeah, I auditioned. The role was initially called Eli, if you guys remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Eli. And he was the audition scene. I remember one of them, he'd gone on some crazy feeding frenzy, and Stefan's at the door. He goes, "What's going on, dude?" Like, hey, join in on the party, you know. And it was so initially a scene. I don't know if they were initially supposed to be more friends with each other than him and Damon or whatever, or if it was just a ghost scene. And then the other scene, I'm allowed to say all this, right? It's fun for the fans. The other scene, he was stuck in a cell with Catherine, and he was recounting his days in the war, turning into a vampire, and there was maybe a little something there. I don't know. But so I think maybe at that stage, you guys might have been kind of feeling out where this character was going to sit. But by the time I got to set, it was, the scenes were different. You know, the character's name was different. And when I did audition, it was one in an American accent, and one in a British accent. And happy they went with the British one.
Well, that's my memory of casting you, is watching all the audition tapes and being like, I don't know if there's anyone in here. So then someone was like, look at Michael Mullarkey. And I was like, I think I saw Michael Mullarkey. They're like, look at the British Michael Mullarkey. And I watched that and I was like, holy crap. And it's the dumbest cliche. It's the dumbest effing cliche that, like, nothing makes a writer feel more talented than their words being read by an English actor. And I remember Ian saying to me in season 3, the aforementioned, you know, tearful conversation where he's like, why are the originals getting all this story and Damon's just stuck being the good guy? And I was like, I mean, have you heard them? speak. They make me feel really talented.
You know? That's great.
But yeah, no, adding Michael Mullarkey to this cast was the greatest thing we ever did. Bar none. You became a friend to everyone instantly. You were a great calming presence. You were professional, respectful, and kind, and you have a great wife. And it was such a thrill to get that piece of casting right, because we talked about this in an earlier episode, but you were supposed to be the third Salvatore brother. Like, that was, right, Brett? Didn't we go down that road for quite a long time? That was the pitch.
100%. Yeah. That was always the plan, and then it went a different direction, but that's why it was so hard to find the person. And yeah, I remember that casting, and you were like, no, I looked at everybody. I don't like anybody. I remember the room was really excited about Michael, and then you saw the British Michael, which you had not seen, and you were like, oh, that's the guy, like 100%. But yeah, that was why it was such a hard process, as we thought it was going to be a Salvatore brother was going to be the story. Yeah. So we cast a very wide net and looked very hard, and that explains those sides you probably read, Michael.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But that's true. That's cool. If he was a Salvatore brother, he was in love with Catherine. So
it just comes with the job. Yeah.
Well, let's get to season 8. The obvious kind of starting point is just the decision that would be the final season. Like, Julie, what do you remember about kind of coming to that? Now's the time to end it.
Oh, God. Okay. So it's all going to have to come back to me in pieces, but. First thing I should say is that, again, I just said this, but like over the course of 8 seasons, everybody wants off the show at a certain point or another. And then it becomes at the end of every season, everyone like wants off the show and is like, can you write me off for next season? And like, there's just always that cyclical like burnout. And then you come back around the next season, everyone's happy again. And this season happened to coincide with the boys renegotiating their deal for this last season, and they had sort of been like, this is it, right? And the deal itself was really hard to make, and Nina was gone, and we, you know, as writers, we've been exhausted for 8 years, and we loved the show so much, but like, we didn't want it to suck ever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, I just feel like between feeling like Paul and Ian were probably close to done, and I was kind of running out of stories, and Dreezy had moved on, Brian had moved on, and like, you know, so you just started to feel a sense of like, we could keep this train going for 10 more years and pass the torch and be supernatural and like keep passing the torch to mm-hmm. everybody else, or we could end it and really feel like we told a complete story, and that like the franchise lives on in the originals, but the Vampire Diaries, the mothership, so to speak, can have a real, true, and thoughtful beginning, middle, and an end. And we kind of really thought, like, if we know going into the season that this is the end, we will be able to do it so much justice. And while it's bittersweet and really sad, I mean, I cried every day for a year in that writer's room, making the decision and then all. But like, it just felt like so few storytellers get to do that, where they get to know the ending that's coming mm-hmm. and they're not canceled and they're not told, oh, you can't come back. Like, they're not fired. Like, you actually get to see a story from like minute one to minute end. And that to me felt like such an honor that I wanted to like have that for the show, for myself, for the ensemble. And like, we just wanted to kind of feel it in the most powerful way and bring it to a close in the most like celebratory way. So then we really thought about how we wanted to honor the fan experience and announce it so that it wasn't just like, oh, you know, Deadline Hollywood tells you the show's coming to an end. And they always use the word canceled when a show's coming to the end. And it's like, that's my mission statement in life, is to get entertainment journalists to stop saying a show's canceled when it like purposefully is coming to a close. But we got super excited about how to break the news and decided to make a whole video, a goodbye video, and to really milk it like in a good way, because we just wanted the beginning of the experience, which would have been Comic-Con of that mm-hmm. year, that final year. We wanted to like invite the fans in on the ride of our goodbye so that they could experience it along with us. And that one, I mean, I cried making that one.
Didn't we do like a preliminary tease post that's just said hashtag TVD forever or something? I feel like we kind of floated something out before to kind of hint yes. in an ominous way.
And I remember announcing it at Comic-Con and the whole room just going, like there was this yeah. silence and it's like, And then everybody starts crying on the panel. Brett, were you there for that one?
Yeah. It was there was an awkward lack of applause because everybody was just emotional.
Well, let's get into the actual plot of the season. Obviously, you know it's going to be the end. I'm very intrigued for Julie and Brett, the discussions in the writer's room about like the decision to like go all the way to do hell, to introduce the devil, to kind of have that be your final story. What was it about that that seemed right to you all?
Well, I think historically we'd always been very allergic, and Julie had always been allergic of those terms, right? Like hell and demons and devil and soul and mm-hmm. certain words were kind of just not stuff we touched. It was always the other side, and it was always grounded. The Vampire Diaries is, you know, as supernatural as the show is, always tried to exist in a very grounded place. And it just felt like the end gave us permission, I think, more than anything else. Obviously, the sirens had sort of crossed us over into a more supernatural. We had never touched things like that. And so who else did you want to see the Salvatores beat but the devil? And so it was always our version of the devil and Cade and an alternate universe and things like that. But that was yeah. clearly the metaphor. And we just decided to sort of go all in on it in the best way because – which, of course, then handed off to Catherine, right? Because who's worse than the devil? I mean, so it always came back to what we do. But we just got very excited about the story, and it seemed to work. And we found a version of it that Julie liked that was comfortable, that wasn't too far, we felt.
How are you here?
The bell rang 11 times. One shy of visiting hell upon this earth, but enough for me to pay a visit.
We can do better. We'll work together.
That won't be necessary. I'll handle it from here.
What are you doing to us?
It was like the other side was always our version of purgatory, and peace was mm-hmm. our version of heaven. And so we were finally able to say, okay, well, what's our version of hell? And to tell the origin story of that, how it came to pass and how it was born out of like such terrible mistreatment of a human being, that darkness traveled with them and became like a vengeful darkness. And it was fun to be able to, you know, to do that.
I think for us too, it was Catherine got sucked off into somewhere. Right. And so the argument was always she had to go somewhere, and we know it's dark. So what if it's this place, you know?
Yeah. What if she has the devil wrapped around her finger still? Of course she would. Incredible.
God bless that lady.
Obviously, the start of season 8, because 7 ends with Damon and Enzo being sirened. There's like creepy hands on Michael's face mm-hmm. being pulled back. Michael, what was it like for you, the start of 8, to just kind of essentially get to play? It's just you and Ian off the rails. Like, what do you remember about those episodes?
Wasn't any acting involved. Ian and I had been kind of subterraneously, it's not a word, but it is now, pitching to work together more, because we'd started off working together a lot and we had an immediate chemistry and connection as people, you know, we really enjoyed the work that we did together. And then we kind of trickled off and did our own things for a while. And we were kind of pitching hard to get to do some stuff together again. And so when we saw those first scripts, we were delighted, obviously.
First of all, let me applaud you on your quick reflexes. The way you just whipped by me, it was impressive.
What is this?
This is what is known as a slow night. I mean, I thought we'd go with the old guy in the road standby, and you almost got by us.
Yeah, maybe it's time we let this one go. It hurts.
What do you want?
We could use a ride. It's the least you could do.
Come on. I'll drive.
I always like when characters are quarantine in a, not actors, but characters. Here I'm in my own quarantine, but quarantined into a certain environment where it's just them and another character or something. And you really get the kind of nuance of conversation and really get to see those characters isolated. And so it was fun, you know, it was really one, a new little world that we hadn't really lived in yet, I suppose. And, you know, I adored my character, and I feel like this was also one of the reasons why I did, just how strong he was mentally and how that showed mm-hmm. how he's, you know, over the years been able to withstand not only physical pain, torture, but also mental strain. And it was the cool character development stuff that was still going on all through the seasons. You know, I never feel like a character I'm playing is set in stone. I like to kind of constantly discover them and find new things about them and let them change, let them progress. I think it's a trap when you think you know your character so much, because you're not open to sometimes what's unraveling in front of you. And I felt like the storyline with Sybil really made me find Enzo in a different way, and also helped to really build the foundation of his relationship with Kat, you know, based on his mm-hmm. strength and his loyalty, his, in my opinion, correct moral code, you know, which he had. He had a really, you know, even when he was bad, he was always doing it for a reason that he thought was the right thing to do.
Sure.
Unless I just justified it.
That was the reason we were always in our hearts willing to let Bonnie fall in love with a vampire. Hmm. Because we'd always said along the way that was the Rubicon that she wouldn't cross. And yet Enzo's moral code was so strong, and based on her, the evolution of her friendship with Damon, and interestingly also her friendship, you know, with Elena, that realizing that, like, I can love this person because he's pure, even if he is the thing that I spent the early part of this series fighting against. And that's why I loved their love story so much, because she finally was like opening herself up to love from this person and loving him just so beautifully.
Yeah.
Yeah, they both kind of fell into love. Literally. It's a beautiful thing when you see two people that are so guarded against such a thing over years of, you know, the wrong journeys with love, finding that, and both being coming from the same place and allowing each other to grow together and becoming stronger. And I will always fight for what's the word I'm looking for? I'll always fight the corner of justifying Enzo's death for poetic justice, for poetry of the piece, if you will. Because I feel like, you know, not everything, and I've talked about this before, and it's often met with some light criticism, but I've always felt that it's important to show all sides to life, and not everything is a happy ending. You know, everyone's screaming about end games, but it's just a fantasy, you know. And I think even though we are working in the fantasy world, it's important to show pain and show how these things unfold and how to deal with pain. And I think that was the beauty of this story, is showing how Bonnie deals with grief and finds strength mm-hmm. and power in what she had and doesn't throw it away, but hangs on to it. And I think there is power in grief if you are able to channel with the people who came before, right? You know, your ancestors, your family members who've passed away, you know, they're still there if you're listening. And I thought that was the real beauty in that. And that's why I'll always stand by it. And it shows us a lesson that's more powerful than them getting married and having kids, right?
Sure.
I think. I'm a melancholic, so, you know, I love that shit.
That was a rough day. Enzo's death was the one death, probably of the whole series, where I think we all wondered if we went too far, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we knew we needed Stefan to do something absolutely unforgivably horrible, you know, because that was that journey. And Brett, chime in, because I know that, we talked about this a lot, you know, and we knew, like, in, I think in our heads, we wanted to get to the end of the season where after, you know, everything that Bonnie went through, that she would have a clear, like the deck would be cleared for her to go off into the world where she wasn't defined by her magic. And she could, you know, and I've talked about the settling down with Matt Donovan in the future pitch, yeah. But where that she could find herself and be in herself without all the burdens of everything that, you know, we put on her on the show. But that was so tragic, that episode. That, and then to make matters worse, it's like you're shooting that death scene and it's the day after the election, the 2016 election.
Was it?
And yeah, and you know, you're out at a house that was like a former plantation. And there's a lot of feelings that day.
No, I think it's one of those where story-wise it was the right move. And, you know, it's just like you know when the thing is right, and sometimes you've got to sit with it for a day because you don't, like, because you love these characters so much, you know? It's like you got to kind of get there, but it was, there had to be loss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. In the same way that, you know, Stefan had to take the bullet at the end of the show. Spoiler alert. But like these are vampires and it's all relative in the world of the Vampire Diaries, I think, you know, but there's a lot of mass murder going on and like everybody can't come out of that clean. And
yeah.
So that was really, it would have felt false if there were not some lasting consequences.
Repercussions.
Yeah. And I remember us thinking we're in the final chapter, like this is it, this is the end of the book, you know, and we knew that the end of the series would be an epilogue, right? But we were writing the end of the book, and in that way everybody's end was purposefully finite, you know, like no death was off the table. Any character could have met their fate in this way. And we went through each character and decided, like, what is the righteous ending that sort of like either absolves them from their sins or makes them pay consequences for their sins or sets them up for hope for the future because they've earned that hope for the future. Like all those choices got to be made. I mean, that's what, so there was no easier season to break than season 8. Of 8 years of absolute torture and hell to break this show, because we wanted it to be so good all the time. We never wanted to settle. But season 8, at least, like, when you knew you could do anything you wanted, you weren't buying time, you weren't stalling, you weren't trying to, like, make a character work that, like, didn't work. You know, you're just, like, you're just saying goodbye. And it was fun. It was fun and very emotional.
So if everyone was on the chopping block, Brett, I'll go to you. How come Matt still lived? We talked in the previous episode, I asked if killing Matt Donovan was ever on the table, and they all talked about you.
Sam, it's always on the table, as far as I'm concerned. We tried. All I can say is we tried, and we failed you all.
It's like a cockroach.
But We tried. I mean, there were some pitches. For a while, it was fun because it was going to be like, what's the pitch that gets Julie to bite? Because it's going to be the greatest pitch ever. So we had him dead for as much as 48 hours at certain times because the pitch was so good that she was like, fuck it, we're doing it. Like, all right. And then she'd come back in. She'd go, no. And so like at some point, you give up. And I think, look, Matt Donovan served a really – like he was the human point of contact in that show. And that was what was valuable about the character. Did we always have the best story for him? No. But you know, if the show is going to come out sort of net on the side of humanity, which hopefully it does, that's kind of the point. Him dying would have felt wrong at the end. I think once we got towards season 8, it would have felt cheap and it would not have been the right move at that point.
Yeah, he actually survived. killing him at the end, right before it's all over, would have been.
What
so
has all this pain and suffering been for? You know,
Enzo on the other hand. That's fine.
Yeah.
Although you also, and we've talked about this one a little bit, Julie, but I am interested to get into killing Tyler. That's the other kind of, obviously, until the final death, which we'll get to. Tyler and Enzo. It's funny. It's like one brother got each, right? Damon kills Tyler. Stefan kills Enzo. What do you all remember about the conversation surrounding killing Tyler?
In order for Damon to come out the other side mm-hmm. of this, you know, sort of possession by the sirens, and to give him a journey that will take him to the end of the series, and for, to get him to a place where he believes that he is not worth living, that Elena, you know, if she were ever to return, would never love him again, that like, that he, you know, to bring him back into his own self at rock bottom, we knew that he had to do something that was so totally unforgivable. You know, it's like a broken record. We tried that in season two, backfired. And that he needed to like really, 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 really go down a bad, bad, bad road. And so it was Jeremy or Tyler.
Mm.
Both were two characters that had, you know, since left the show without dying. Although, I mean, Jeremy, but they both died multiple times, but we're still alive in our universe. So it ended up being Tyler. And that actually, I'll be honest about that. I regret that as having been the end of Tyler Lockwood's character. If I look at the whole thing in the aggregate, even though we struggled a lot writing him in non-Caroline years and non-werewolf years, we struggled just to find a story for the character. We loved him, but we loved Trevino, but I just felt like, oh man, like, okay, bye. and it was shocking and it worked, but I was sort of, that's why I was happy to bring it back at the end in the finale for that one little moment. It's like, yeah. This character meant something to us too. It really did. And Trevino really meant a lot to us. So, but yeah, that was an interesting choice.
He's a good dude. He's definitely a good dude. We just did a little short film together just to go off piste, but it was his little directorial debut. And it was nice of him to think of me.
And he's going
to
be directing Roswell this year.
Yeah.
His first episode.
He's getting his gears oiled. But he's got a good brain for that. You know, he sees everything. He sees a lot of stuff, and I think he's going to do great.
We have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Also,
knowing the more about gel coat.
When the fourth round would...
Don't you call in the...
Don't touch that dial. That's right, we're still calling it a dial here, because it's Emmy season on The Awardist. With the dazzling Oscar season behind us, we are now turning our attention to smaller screens to track which shows are headed to the podium and which shows stopped us in our tracks. Join me, Jared Hall, Entertainment Weekly's executive editor, as well as EW's TV-obsessed staffers, every Thursday starting April 4th, as we share our opinionated hot takes and insight into the Emmys race. The Awardist will get behind the scenes with the creators and stars themselves during in-depth, can't-miss interviews. Follow the long road to the Emmys with The Awardist podcast, Thursday starting April 4th, on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to check out more Emmys coverage at EW.com/awardist.
Now back to the show. Well, we've talked about the sirens. We have Sybil. And then we have the sister reveal, which, Julie, at that point, had you already worked with Kristen on Containment and you pulled her into this, that? Okay.
Yes.
What an actress.
The greatest heartbreak of my life. The greatest heartbreak of my life was Containment.
I know.
Ending after one season.
Criminal. That was Criminal.
Right. Thank you. one of the great things was about being able to bring some of those players into the Vampire Diaries world. And Kristen did a nice job.
She was so good.
She's great in The Handmaid's Tale. Well,
oh yeah.
If you've seen her in that, she's so good.
Yeah.
Better than the other one.
Oh, that girl.
What kind of went into, what was it about having them be sisters that intrigued you all in the writer's room in terms of kind of telling another sibling story next to obviously a very Stefan Damon centric season?
Other than that, sort of always our go-to template is finding the emotional connection in our villains.
Sure.
I don't know, Brett, do you remember anything specific about that?
I don't actually. I don't remember why we couched them as sisters, other than the mythology took us that direction. Or I'm trying to remember if we had come up with that episode that Neil and I had done where you crossed them. I mean, it was kind of just the mirror to Stefan and Damon, right? Like, it was a brother story and here's an evil sister story and who's going to cross. But I don't weirdly remember the specific conversations. I feel like it was always the plan from the jump, though. That wasn't a revelation. They became sisters from the jump, and that's kind of how it was.
Yeah.
Oh, because it was a dad story. It was kind of Cade as their dad. It was that.
Oh,
it was,
yeah,
the abandoned child. Like, it really was. That's what it was. And, you know, the story of how they were stranded on the island. And, mm-hmm. and just, we love the Siren mythology. And so I think it was just about building back from how do these two young girls get stranded on an island and what we're in and how we could make that mythology sort of be grounded and work for us.
Was there, did you all have like a final season checklist or wish list? Julie, I'm imagining you walking into the room and just being like, Steriline wedding is happening.
Yes. Well, yes, we did. We had a list of unresolved threads.
Mm.
Things that we had, like, because I, from the jump, the minute we started the show, I said, we will never introduce something that we don't know how to pay off or that we don't know how to answer. Every television storyteller prior to that, because DVDs did not exist, could totally write whatever the hell they wanted, end on like a mysterious cliffhanger, and then never go back. Like, the minute DVDs and then ultimately like DVRs were a thing, like, you were held accountable for your own choices, and you couldn't just like be like, oh, that's cool, we'll figure it out later. But every now and then there was a thing that would like that would leak through that we couldn't ever figure out how to resolve. And I think that when we got to the end of this season, the only thing left on that list was, what did the letter that Sheriff Forbes wrote to Caroline mm-hmm. when Caroline's mm-hmm. humanity was off and Caroline burned, what did that say? And I don't think, did we ever figure that out? Like, I think we finally mm-hmm. gave up. I'm like, well, one remaining thread is okay.
Some things are better left unsaid, Jules.
Yeah. Do you remember, did we have, like, I couldn't remember what else was on the list, but there was, like, a little list that we had to, like.
Oh, sure. I mean, endings are easy. I mean, they're hard to, like, nail and do right, but, like, you know all the things you want to do. I mean, 8 years, like Julie said, season 8 was just, you know, Vampire Diaries is probably the hardest show anybody has ever broken, and we did, like, what, 180-something of them?
172?
But I guarantee you, we wrote 270 of them. And it's just the hardest show to break because it's about 250-year-old dudes without jobs. Like, that makes it impossible. Like, it's the hardest thing ever. Like, nobody has anywhere to be. Nobody has anything to do. It was really...
Except drink.
Exactly. But it really became about that show was built on what are these characters saying to one another.
Mm.
And that is very, very difficult. How are their interpersonal dynamics shifting? But by the time we got to season 8, we had obviously built up such a tapestry of things and relationships that paying them off. Season 8 was the reward for all the hard seasons in terms of just getting to go, this is an episode, I can't wait to do this. Because it was always like, how do we do this, but then keep this going? And that mm-hmm. show burns story relentlessly. And so to bring those stories to a close, it was fun to think about those things. It was beautiful. Yeah, it really was. I mean, That was why I wanted to come back and be a part of that season, was to bring something to an end was really beautiful, and to bring that experience that we'd all spent years together on was one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life, and it was sad and heartbreaking. But I mean, I remember saying goodbye to those sets and as actors wrapped and realizing my last pickup shot was Damon on the concrete ground outside the Salvatore house for another episode. But I remember all those things and they're indelible. And a bunch of us flew out and went to set for the last, you know, we were there with Julie when she was directing and called Rap. I mean, it was a beautiful experience. So season 8 was a joy in that way.
There was a real festive air about the last couple months, you know.
It was an Irish wake, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an Irish wake. Absolutely.
It was definitely, you know, a lot of older characters flew back in, and you kind of got to see all these familiar faces over the years. And I didn't know all of them, but, you know, I knew enough to feel that love.
Yeah.
It was cool. And I felt the same. I felt like it was really, it crept up on us too. I mean, like all of a sudden you're done, right? Because you're pushing through, oh, it's the last season, there's loads to get through. And then all of a sudden the time just gets, you know, thinner and thinner, and then it's out. I'm out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cool. I second that. It was a special time in my life too. And having my first kid during the filming, and falling in love with Atlanta, you know, I ended up moving back there and getting a house there, and a lot of good memories. So I'm always grateful and think happy thoughts when I think of all our time together there.
I just think about you. I don't know how this hits for you guys, but just think about saying goodbye to those sets. You know, like how like memories and pain and suffering or great love like imprints on spaces, and those sets were soaked in it. And
yeah,
actually last year I had to go back to those stages because we were using a set for Black Lightning for Legacies, and it was weird. It was strange. Just that there's so many ghosts there, and it's a different high school, and but this used to be the wood, and it's just, but I remember walking through those for the last time, but then you walk out in the woods and it's all the same. And it's like the tree stump from Bonnie's funeral is still there. So, you know, and it's like, you're like, they don't know what that is, but it's all just the ghosts of it was a very, a lot of ghosts there. It was a beautiful experience though. It really was.
Michael, you mentioned familiar faces coming back. So did you all know that you would have Nina for one episode, like at the start of, like, did you know going into season 8 that you would get her for the finale? Were you kind of writing around you might not have Catherine be the big final bad? How did that go?
I'll let y'all take that one.
we wanted to approach her when we had a story, and we wanted to have a good story. So we wanted to break the story. And so of course we broke the story that like had her in multiple episodes. And she was like down for it, like in like theory, right? You know, she was like, yeah, just, you know, of course I want to come back and say goodbye. And then you have to make a deal, and, you know.
Sure.
You make the deal. And the way it all, you know, the way it all resolved itself is that she would be there for that one episode. And it was so scary because while we were negotiating, I was like, what if this falls apart? Like, what if we get to this last episode and we kept Elena in a sleep spell and we've spent the entire season building up to Catherine is literally the devil, or like, and what if this deal doesn't make? Because for me, it's like, there's a price for everything, right? Just pay the price. Yeah. But for the people that write the checks, there is not a price for everything. And there is a tipping point in which they are not going to write that check, no matter how much you want it. And I was sweating so hard and it went on for weeks before we closed the deal. It was terrifying because like the whole thing would have imploded. And I was just like, in my head, I'm like, we're not going to think like this. It's going to happen. It's gonna happen. And it did happen. And Nina showed up and was just a fucking delight to have back. She was happy to be there. She was so engaged and so committed and just really, really wanted to put Elena away in, you know, with nothing but like commitment and respect and joy. And she just brought it in spades and it was so great. But
I hope you enjoyed the little show I put on for you. It's been a hoot watching you take on the devil. Especially considering I've had him wrapped around my finger since the minute I stepped into hell. Why did you think he wanted you? Because I wanted you. Duh.
Damn it, Catherine. Where is she?
It really is the perfect revenge. At 10 p.m., Mystic Falls will burn. Precious Elena will burn. And I'm guessing one of you two Salvators are going down with her. Should I place my bets now?
It's funny because oftentimes not you guys, but just in general production, the scripts get written before the deals get done. So you have, you know, you guest on a show and they have a plan for you that you have no idea about. So you start kind of booking other things or whatever, and then it just becomes this whole mess. And it's like, well, why don't you just tell us straight up? Like, we want to do 5 episodes with you. Can we carve out the time? It's just, there's so many complicated inner workings with studio and agencies and all this stuff that make it difficult sometimes.
Really hard. Now, we started losing, I guess, I can't remember which show, but like that was, it was either like Vampire Diaries or Originals or Legacies, where like we had been rolling the dice for years and years and years on guest stars, especially guest stars through pilot season. Because, you know, it's like if you've got an arc for the last chapter of your season and it's pilot season, all your guest stars are like, we're not coming to Atlanta. We want to be in LA. We want to be auditioning for pilots. And so we had to like be so crafty about like writing people so that they didn't have to work much, but so that we didn't have to write them off, but like praying they didn't get pilots, even though we wanted them to succeed, like all the emotional stuff of like, you know, but like not being able, knowing that even like we didn't have the money to lock them up to make them series regulars. So we just had to gamble. And more often than not, we got it right. But what was the one that just boned us so hard?
God, there's been a bunch over the years. It's a more recent thing. I mean, obviously, you know, the problem now is that television's year round. It used to be you had to dodge pilot season, and now you can lose somebody at the drop of a hat. Mm. So, you know, we got Kung Fu'd last season, you know, that one, her, yeah, that Olivia, who's the best, like that one really hurt. Yeah. And so we were like 2 days away from making her a series regular. And
she got Kung Fu.
And which we're thrilled for. You know, like at the end of the day, it's like, I mean, you're going to be the lead of a show. And, you know, she had been an intern at the CW affiliate in San Diego like 5 years prior, 3 years prior.
Oh,
it's such a beautiful story. Yeah, it's such a beautiful story. And she is so awesome. But it happened to us a couple times for sure. It does. Like, I think our batting average was good on the Vampire Diaries.
Yeah.
Nowadays the landscape has changed and it's very, very difficult because people can disappear overnight.
Was Enzo originally like a 3-episode guest star, or like how did it always start as a larger role?
That's why it's funny that Michael's like, yeah, I don't know if it's coming for one. Cause no, he was literally meant to be the third Salvatore brother. And
that's so funny.
And we kind of figured that if we succeeded in casting that he would be around. Every time we brought on a new character, it was like, if the character succeeds, we'll kill them, because it's a body that you're emotionally connected to. If it's that super success of both the character succeeds and the actor succeeds, then you kind of want to keep them as long as you can, you know? So because you love the actor and the character, and so you just don't want to kill anybody off. But really, every character we created to kill eventually. It's just like a matter of like, do they have a 3-episode arc or a one year arc? Enzo was always a longer game in our minds, even though we switched gears in the actual trajectory of a story. He was always meant to be around, but Michael didn't know that. They never do.
It warms my cockles, as they say.
Speaking of killing characters, let's get to the big decision of which Salvatore do you kill in your finale? Because I remember talking about this, Julie, when it happened, of like, you guys had Damon dying for a long time, right?
Oh, yeah. We went back and forth in the writer's room all season long. Hmm. All season long. And it was like, you know, pros and cons, pros and cons, pros and cons. And we finally landed on, we're killing Damon. That's the right thing to do. He is the one with the consequence to pay. You know, again, Stefan was just morally a bit stronger of a character. But then Kevin came in, right, Brett? Kevin came in and was like, why the fuck would you do that? And we were like, you know, that's always what happens in writers' rooms. You like, you become convinced of something as a group, and then one person with an outside perspective comes in and is like, you're wrong. And then you realize that probably. It was that more than that. It was just Kevin being like, why would you kill David?
It was that. I remember too. It's like we had like really thinned out at that point for whatever reason. Cause I remember the finale was kind of like you, me, Neil Reynolds, and then Kevin came, and we had had the break, and we'd had all the discussions in the group about, you know, look, Damon's a fairly obvious choice. You're always going to feel like, I think that's when you watch the show. But Kevin was also a very classic pitcher against the flow. Like, that's his thing. Kevin will always explore the opposite if
Yes.
And so he loved the whole episode, and we spent like 2 days with him, and it was a really great, it's one of the things I remember most fondly is, you know, as the lights are going out in the office kind of, and people are leaving and cleaning out their office and the finale's all up. And Kevin just was like, I love everything, but it should be Stefan. Because the big move of that pilot was realizing that one of the brothers being human meant that they could be compelled. Mm. That was the great twist, was that Damon can now compel Stefan.
Then you're right. You are human. Which is why I can do this. Go.
No, Damon.
You're going to walk out of these tunnels. And you are not going to stop until my death breaks the compulsion. Because I am the big brother. I'm sorry I wasn't better at it until now. I said, go. Go.
And so that was the twist that break hinged on. And then Kevin was like, yeah, except Stefan should double back and it should be Stefan.
You love this, don't you?
You have no idea.
I gave him my blood. The cure.
You what?
Without the cure, I'd start to age. I'd be dead soon enough.
So Damon's okay.
He's okay.
Yeah, we love the pitch that Damon compels Stefan to let him die. Mm-hmm. Like, after everything I have done to you, brother, like, give me this. Like, this is the thing. I'm going to take this bullet for you. And then when we decide to sort of get to have our cake and eat it too, which is that, yes, Damon did that, but then Stefan, you know, after the fact, reversed that. We learned that later. That really gave us everything that we wanted, because it was really wanting Damon to sacrifice himself, because he's the one that had fucked up more, you know, right, in life. And when all said and done, I think it's great, because Damon is the one who, having fucked up so much and redeemed himself, actually could now go and live the life that he thought he would never have. Whereas Stefan really carried the consequence of all of his sins on a much heavier spiritual level. And it's almost like this was his way of amends, making amends for his past misdeeds. And it felt like dying for Stefan freed him from a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. Whereas it felt like living for Damon freed him to go and be the man that he was always supposed to be. So the poetry of it at the end of it all was really nice. But yeah, we went. And then we wouldn't tell Paul or Ian. Paul was dying, you know, because Paul wanted to die so bad and like was like, you've got to kill me, you got to come. And he was dying, you know, and I would just fuck with him. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't think it's going to go your way. I don't know. We'll see.
He felt so bad about ripping my heart out. He knew.
Yeah.
He had to go.
That was really the breaking straw. Yeah, that was why, Michael. You're right. It was like, how could Stefan do that?
Yeah.
Yes. This one's for Enzo. As the fireball's coming.
It's in parentheses in the script. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, our original pitch back, like when we had our moment of epiphany in like the W like food court in Atlanta back in season 2, I think, was the boys would sacrifice themselves to save Elena so that Elena could go on and have a life and be human and live, you know, so that like when push came to shove to save her, they would die together. And that was always the pitch from not day one, but season, you know, 1.0. And then when Nina left, it felt like the show can't be as much about protecting Elena's happiness, although that's important to us. But we want to protect these brothers' happiness. We want them to get something out of this.
Brothers bond.
So brothers bond, exactly. So then it shifted to, well, we can't kill both of them for her, because that feels somehow like nobody got what they wanted. And like, let's find a different way to give one of these brothers the happiness that they need and the other brother the closure that they need.
The early years of that show are or 5 good years of that show. It's a love triangle between two brothers who are in love with the same woman. And I think when Nina left, we realized the show is a love story about these two brothers. And that's all, it's that simple.
And I was just shouting out, Brett, that episode, your episode in the tomb with the M83 song, is sort of being the moment when all kind of collectively were like, oh, this is a love story between these two now, you know? Not one of my favorite moments of the whole series.
I remember you saying to me on set that like Nina leaving is what kind of like sealed the romantic contract between Damon and Elena, because she couldn't fall asleep in love with one brother and wake up confused. And that's kind of what set you all on that path. And then, yeah, the brother hug that sealed it all is still one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, it was basically like in my mind, because we got, you know, we had Steph and Elena for the first 3 seasons. We got Damon and Elena together in 4. Knew we'd get like a good, you know, many season run out of that. But like in long running shows, eventually you want to start to kind of twist the chemistry around again. And I sort of thought that by the time we came back to the end of the series in 8 years or whenever it was, that Elena would have found her way back to Stefan, and Damon would have found a different path, like recognizing this wasn't supposed to happen. But when we had to write her out because she was done, then yes, it basically said, okay, this is now Damon and Elena are the love story that will take us to the end here. There is no more moving around here. Because I love the idea of Stefan and Caroline and Damon and Elena, and then like those couples sort of parting again and then finding a new final chapter for them. But life brings you other roads, and the roads that you take lead you to where you land. And I love the Sleeping Beauty spell in a way. You know, I love being able to do the show without Elena and be just as much in love with it as always, you know, nothing against Nina and Elena. I mean, it's just that the heroine is the hardest character to write for always, because she's kind of the one that's always making the right choice and doing the right thing. And it always has to be sort of like driving the train, and it just can get really tedious. And so freeing ourselves from Elena as writers was actually a really nice turn.
All right. Anyone have any final season 8 thoughts?
Well, I just, you know, it's saying goodbye. Brett talked about watching the show, you know, walking through the sets, and I felt that every day I was there for that last season. Like one day soon, this will all be over and these sets will come down and it will be like it never existed, which is super emotional, you know, and yet now it's years later and it's lived on, and every year there's a new group of 12-year-olds discovering the show, and it's been so much fun reliving the show and the experience of making it with this. Sam, thank you for Entertainment Weekly for doing this. And you know, but even as we celebrate it, I think it's important to also acknowledge, we've talked about it a lot over these 8 episodes, that there were choices made in storytelling back then that don't really hold up today as a beacon for how we want our world to be. And for me, you know, having learned a lot of lessons along the way, it's sort of none more apparent. And then the fact that can candidly kind of humbly admit and realize that I personally didn't make certain elements of representation, especially Black representation, a priority in the writer's room. And as a result, made mistakes along the way that caused harm to people. And so I just wanted to say that, because we've had such a good run celebrating this show, and it is so beloved by a lot of people. But there are some people that kind of, you know, rightfully so, can point a finger and say, you kind of messed that up. And there are places where absolutely we messed that up. And I will say I messed that up because I was in charge. So I just wanted to kind of say that out loud. And may we all go into the world telling the kind of stories that represent the way we want the world to be.
Very well said.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me as well, guys.
Beautiful note. Yes, absolutely. Thank you all so much. And that brings us to the end of our Vampire Diaries binge. I'd like to thank all of the guests who joined me on this journey, especially executive producer Julie Black for being there each and every episode. Remember, we covered every season of the Vampire Diaries on this season of Binge, so go back and check out those episodes if you haven't already. Also, remember to subscribe to EW's Binge for more seasons covering binge-worthy pop culture. And if you like what you heard, please rate and review the podcast. And be sure to follow Entertainment Weekly on Twitter @EW for more Vampire Diaries coverage. Binge is also a video series if you'd like to check that out at EW. www.ntw.com/binge, and you can find me on Twitter at Sam Heifel. Thanks for listening.